This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod episode 130. I am Lewis, your host for this episode, and I am joined by some newish faces to natter all about everything that's going on in the world of the Sega Dreamcast, or as we here at the Junkyard like to think of it, the console that just refuses to die. So first and foremost, I've got someone with me here who we might know a little bit better in our Discord and our community as Pizza Hotline. On the podcast, we call him Harvey Jones. How are you doing today, Harvey?
Hello. Good thing. Good to be back on the prestigious Dream Pod. I'm good.
You firing away with the music still?
Yeah, absolutely. Every day. Full on. Loving it.
Yeah, I think like every time you're on, I must tell our listeners that you are the maestro who composed the sick outro music that you hear at the end of the episode.
Thank you. Well, every time I listen to a Dream Pod, whether I'm on it or not, when it gets to the end, the tune comes in, and I always forget that it's like going to be there, and I'm always like, oh yeah, that's cool.
It's pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah, it's fun. It was fun. I might turn it into a full tune one day.
You should. Yeah. I will admit when I finish editing an episode, like that's the bit that goes in last, and I hear that and it's like so cool, but it also tells me you finish editing, well done.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, good to be of service.
Next up on our all-star roster of newish names, we have another guy who people who are in our Discord may recognize. He is always in there in the text channel chatting away under the username Mike Rocks with an X. He's always got his fingers on the pulse when it comes to Dreamcast news, so we thought let's invite him to chat away into a microphone instead. So everybody welcome Mike Rogers, or Mike Rocks. Hello.
Yeah, you're definitely running slim on the roster.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, yeah.
I don't know if you just want to tell the people out there like how you kind of got into the crazy world of Dreamcast.
Well, I'm just from back in the day with it, you know. When I was 15, I first got the console pretty much just after it came out. I think you read on the Christmas podcast about busking in the street for it.
Yep. Was it your trombone? Was it
on my trombone? Yeah.
Yeah.
No way. That's so interesting.
Yeah. When you're little and you haven't quite gone through puberty, it's amazing how much money you can get from little old ladies busking on the street.
That's amazing.
How long did it take to busk for the Dreamcast?
I only had to busk for about 4 hours.
Oh, wow.
It was in 19. Yeah, 4 hours, you could get at least 50 quid an hour. That's what I'm saying, is that the little old ladies love you, and then you you grow a bit of facial hair and it just completely dries up.
I got to get me a trombone and a shaver.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I love that story. So finally, we have someone joining us from the USA, and he is so busy in the Dreamcast community that he would have inevitably been mentioned on this episode anyway. So I thought, why don't we just get him on to speak for himself? And that is the ever busy, ever present in the scene, Derek Pascarella. Welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Lewis. Always a pleasure to be here. Actually, I don't know. I don't know if I would have been mentioned in this episode.
No, there is something on our news agenda today that is relevant to you. So, yeah, you didn't quite get away with it this time. Like,
oh, rats.
Yeah. But obviously, if you've listened to the Dream Pods before or you read the blog, Derek is very well known in the scene for Dreamcast fan translations and other kind of miscellaneous hacks. Not just Dreamcast, you recently put out two translations for Saturn games as well, as well as a plethora of like quite obscure consoles that, what is it, like the FM Towns?
That's the eclectic range. Yeah, Dreamcast, yeah. Saturn, FM Towns. You know, everybody's top three, basically.
Yeah, the top three, yeah.
You like the underdogs, clearly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So on these shows, we like to start the episode with an introductory question. And seeing as we've got such a fresh-faced panel on today, I thought we'd keep it old school and see what everyone's tastes are gaming-wise. So I'll go in reverse order of how I introduce you all. So I'll start with Derek. What games have you picked up or have been playing recently? And that can be Dreamcast or otherwise, or can be modern stuff. I know you recently got a Switch, which is, if anyone knows Derek, you don't really play a lot of modern stuff. So it's quite interesting to hear that you've got a Switch. So, yeah, what have you been playing, mate?
Very true. Besides the Switch, the newest console in my house is a PlayStation 2.
Damn.
And my wife, I love her, she took a risk on Christmas. You know what, I'm gonna get him a Nintendo Switch, and I'm really glad she did, because I mean, if there is any machine today that embodies, you know, the spirit of gaming years gone by, the ones that I am nostalgically stuck in, for better or worse, I would say it's definitely the Switch. Sure as hell ain't PlayStation 5 or whatever they're calling the Xbox these days.
Well said. Yeah. What's your favorite thing you've played on the Switch so far?
What we've had the most fun with is just the stereotypical, just because of the two-player nature, Mario Kart, just because the two of us can sit there and play it forever. I mean, the formula that Nintendo cooked up there, it is the best kart racer and has been since, I mean, maybe during the Genesis, Mega Drive, you know, Super Famicom era, maybe there were other contenders, but ever since Nintendo 64, Mario Kart has definitely been like the perfect kart racer. Although Crash Team Racing has definitely gotten close,
big up.
I would say.
Great game.
Any love for Looney Tunes Space Race, Derek?
Yes, I've always said I've so badly wanted like a really good kart racer on the Dreamcast, and Looney Tunes Space Race is definitely the, you know, as good as it gets on there. I do love it.
Guys, are you forgetting about Walt Disney World Quest Magical Racing Tour? Hello?
Yeah, I've actually played more than my fair share of that one.
Have you? I've never played it, but I've heard horror stories of that game, man.
So you say that, but I've seen people saying how it's like the most remembered Dreamcast kart racer, and it's like Looney Tunes Space Race, or it's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I've also heard from one of Mike Phelan's recent articles about Disney games that when you play it multiplayer, it tanks like a mother. So
he does it in single player, so.
Oh, right, okay.
That's really funny.
So, Derek, what else have you been playing, or have you picked anything new up gaming-wise?
So, I mean, on the Switch, also Bomb Rush Cyberpunk.
Yes.
Which is,
great game.
I cannot believe how well they, like, when everybody said, oh man, Sega's really gonna have to pull one out of their hat for you know, the modern reincarnation of Jet Grind Radio, they weren't kidding, because they really got it down in Bomb Rush. But other than that, I've been playing the games that I've been working on hacking, like Jung Rhythm on the Saturn, which I played a ton of for an entire month, and now I don't have to play it again for a long time, which is also a recent pickup, because I always like to own the physical of any game that I work on, if it's affordable.
Yeah.
So
everyone go check out Jung Rhythm. And yeah, and you also translated Rabbit recently, so everyone go check that out as well if you are a Saturn player, which you should be, because it's a great console, also misunderstood like the Dreamcast. So and as I'm going in reverse order, next we come to Mike. So Mike, what have you been playing recently, or acquired, Dreamcast or otherwise?
Dreamcast-wise, I'm going to have to check notes here, because, Fragmented Almanac. I'm hopeless at remembering game titles. I can't even remember what I've been playing for the last 3 months on Steam every week.
What have you been playing for the last 3 months on Steam?
I don't know. I've just been trying to look it up. It's like a live service third-person shooter. I keep wanting to say it's Unforspoken or something, but...
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Fragment 2, but that's just how much I remember it. Even people at work keep asking me what it is, and I'm like, I don't know. It's just this... It's like Gears of War. It's procedurally generated. It's actually pretty decent, but it's just such a uninspired title.
That's why you can't remember the name. So just Fragmented Almanac on the Dreamcast then.
So there's been that, and I recently rebought a PSP.
Oh, cool.
And been revisiting a few things on that, most recently Outrun 2006.
Nice, nice. Have you hacked it? Because I don't actually own a PSP, but I know they're quite easy to hack, supposedly.
I haven't yet. I keep mulling it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like Derek's already going to probably call me out for it anyway.
I just unmuted myself. I swear to God. you got to do it, Mike. And it's very easy. And I mean, the PSP is one of those ones where it's like, if you're really going to try to experience that library, dealing with a bunch of UMDs, I mean, oof.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's so nostalgic because it's like a portable Dreamcast. It even screeches when it reads the discs.
It even never reads any discs.
And it's the only other console that has a Power Stone on it, so...
So there you go.
Yeah, you're right.
In the stones. But no, I did have an overclocked PSP a long time ago, and I remember it ran Outrun a lot better than it runs stock.
Yeah, yeah. So, Harvey, we come to you next. What have you been playing? What have you acquired recently?
So, I've actually been enjoying some current-gen stuff.
Ooh. Ooh.
The Last of Us Part 2, just finished that. Really, really, the most disgustingly gory thing I think I've ever seen. It's like photorealistic, seriously gory violence. But nonetheless, a very good game. Mm-hmm. But in terms of retro stuff, I completed Blue Stinger.
I was going to say, speaking of modern gen, the Dreamcast.
Yeah, basically. I've completed Blue Stinger and I'm really chuffed because, one, I don't often complete games because I just, if I lose interest, then I lose interest and I just forget about them. And honestly, 90% of the games I start, I never actually finish. And that's just, you know, I used to hate that about myself, but I've learned to love it. But I completed Blue Stinger. I really worked hard to complete that game and I had such a good time. It's such an interesting video game. You know, for all its faults, it's like stuffed with interesting ideas that I've never really seen anywhere else in a game. And I just love Dogs Bauer. He's just so funny and inappropriate. And he's just a funny dude, man. I also had a load of fun playing Alanzar, which is one of Orion's games.
Oh,
is
yeah. Right, Orion? Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that game. I had to grab a walkthrough.
Yeah.
I tried really hard not to, but I gave in.
That was the one. That's the one that's very much like Myst, isn't it? That kind of pre-rendered kind of point and click kind of game, isn't it?
Exactly. Honestly, I booted up not thinking, like, I didn't really know what to expect. And the thing that really made me want to finish it was just the atmosphere is really quite, like, it almost feels like a haunted bit of software.
Like, nice, yeah.
A bit like a game that time has forgotten.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel like I'm playing one of those really old PC games, but it makes me feel like I'm like stuck, you know, after school club at some sort of computer class, like playing this like haunted old game that, you know, big PC box, it was all dusty and I blew it off and, you know, all this kind of, it just feels like a lonely game. I don't know. But I really enjoyed that. And I haven't completed it, but I played this about a year ago, actually, but I thought I'd mention it because Mike bought the Fragmented Almanac. But I really enjoyed Rhea Pericycle for a similar reason. The atmosphere in that game is really cool.
Mm.
It's really potent. And I might grab the hard copy and try and finish that one off. But that's what I've been playing.
Brilliant. Yeah. So as for myself, not games, but I did. I got the Dreamcast Zara man bag, as I referred to it on a previous episode.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah, and it's very cool. It's very high quality.
It's very cool.
It's a nice little bag, actually. I don't know, it's a bit annoying kind of lugging around like a big rucksack or a shoulder bag, you know, when you're going out, and you can just have your little Dreamcast man bag, you know, with your keys in it and your money, you know. It's great. But the other thing I got was Andrew Dickinson, our pal on the Dream Pod. He managed to get some of the Hallmark Dreamcast Christmas ornaments. And
oh,
I think, I believe John Riggs bought some, and then, like, you know, money was exchanged. So I finally got that. It was a little while after he got it. So I got this Christmas ornament in April, and I don't even think I'm going to hang it on the tree. I'm going to be boring and just stick it on a shelf. But I believe Derek might have one. Do you have the Hallmark decoration?
I do, and I shamelessly also keep it right there on the shelf, baby.
It's too nice. You don't want to hang it on a tree and it falls off and breaks. It's
so cool. Yeah. I love the way it looks.
Has it got like a light up thing on it? Am I thinking
Yeah.
You press the power button and the VMU lights up and it plays the Emerald Coast music really loudly, may I add.
I can demonstrate if you need.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who doesn't have one here?
Oh, man.
I feel like so left out.
We need to get you one. But I remember showing my wife, like, oh, check out this cool decoration. And I remember I actually stood back to show it to her because it plays that loudly. I don't know.
Puts on ear defenders. Check out my new decoration.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's even louder than the Genesis one that they did.
It's louder than the beep that a VMU makes when you turn on your Dreamcast. Whoa. Yeah. It's pretty loud. And then I also got Fragmented Almanac as well. Got a copy of that. Thank you to the developers for sending me that. And I sent one off to Tom Charnock as well. So he'll be playing that as well. So, yeah, I haven't actually had a chance to play it myself, I will admit, because I've been moving house recently. So I've not really been that gamey in general. I've not really been playing that much, except one game, which I will mention, and that is recently on the Switch, I noticed they brought out a game starring Princess Peach from Mario. And when I saw that, I thought, you know what? When I was younger, I was reading the UK Nintendo Official magazine, and I saw teased a 2D platformer starring Peach. And like, I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's cool and different. And so I like found the game in CEX. It was surprisingly like not that cheap. It was around like £30, but I chanced it. And all I'll say is that, you know, if you're into like 2D Mario titles, like, you know, Yoshi's Island or Super Mario World, the Super Nintendo kind of era, this is a really good game. And yeah, it's like kind of puzzly and good old Mario 2D platforming. So yeah, Super Princess Peach on the Nintendo DS. I honestly, one of the more random games that's probably been brought up in these game discussions.
I honestly thought you were going to say the new Princess Peach game.
You know what? Like, I looked at that and I thought, I'm going to be like an old git and play the one on Nintendo DS. And it's a bit depressing that I'm saying I'm an old git for playing a DS game, to be honest. But
it's even more depressing that I remember playing it when it came out.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when it came out, my friends had it. And the first thing they did, we were hanging out and they brought their DSs literally launch day, and they went on PictoChat and started sending drawings of dicks to each other.
That of course.
As children
what
do.
What else are you going to do?
Exactly.
Oh, that's just an indication that they're very normal.
Yeah.
It's like the 2006 version of airdropping inappropriate things to strangers on a train, right?
Yes.
That's what it is.
Love it.
Yeah. Speaking of consoles that are easy to hack, the 3DS, which is really easy to hack. I've been enjoying not giving Nintendo any money, seeing as they shut down the eShops. Yeah. So hack your 3DS. There's a really good Virtual Boy emulator that I've been trying out. So yeah, give that a go. Right, enough about Nintendo. I feel like we've mentioned Nintendo quite a bit, actually. We need to swiftly end that part of the podcast and move on to the Sega Dreamcast, which is the reason why we are all here. We're pretty busy with Kickstarters in the last few months, crowdfunding campaigns. And the first one that I wanted to talk about was for VMU replacement shells. VGN Ysoft brought out a Kickstarter and it was fully funded. They reached their goal. Yeah, so basically they've found a process for engineering these the injection molded parts. So you've got the front, the back, the cap, the battery door, and the D-pad for the VMU. So they're basically breathing new life into those old, maybe yellowed VMUs that you've probably got lying around. So they were nice enough to send us some of these replacement shells. It was the clear one and a silver one. And I did a video that I put up on YouTube where I like basically took some old decrepit VMUs apart and I put these on. And yeah, they're really high quality. They feel exactly like the same toughness as an actual VMU shell. I suppose the only disappointing thing, and I guess this is it's obvious why, is it they don't say Dreamcast on them, they're just plain. But they have confirmed to us that they will be using these this process to make VMUs in the future for special editions for indie games. So, you know, that'd be really cool. They previously did a Hermes special edition that had a Hermes branded VMU. I think Mike might have got one of those. I think, did you get one of those?
Yes, I do have it. However, shamelessly, it's sat sealed.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of too cool to... I don't want to stick it in the Dreamcast and ruin the nice, you know, screen printing. But that one there, actually, just to clarify, isn't one of these... in these injection molded parts that they've created themselves. That was new old stock that they printed that on as like a test. But
oh, so that was a genuine Sega VMU they used for the Hermes one?
Yes, yeah.
Ah, interesting. They must have had a load of green ones.
The green ones were the ones you found new in box on eBay for the longest time. So whatever that's happened, nice. There was an excess of those.
They've made it to the UK in like the early mid-2000s. The green ones were everywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when I was looking for colourful ones, like in the last couple of years, the green one was the one that was the cheapest, obviously because there's more of them. And green's my favourite colour. So that worked out nicely.
VGNY haven't done a green VMU shell. They have done gold, silver, transparent orange, transparent purple, transparent black, and, you know, just clear, transparent white, clear. It's just clear. Yeah, so those are the colors that they have available. They also had a vote for the community to vote on colors they wanted, and obviously they're going to be hearing more feedback. The only thing with this Kickstarter, and a few of us UK based guys at the junkyard kind of had issues with, like, the postage was pretty hefty. Yeah, that was a bit of an issue for us as far as, you know, buying them. They have confirmed that they will be means to buy these from like European sellers and distributors. Now the Kickstarter has ended, so I guess look out for that. So guys, what do you think of these? Any thoughts?
I'm thinking I need to get exclusivity on the caps.
Yeah.
I know. First thing to go, right?
You know, until I got that Hermes VMU, I owned no VMUs with caps. That is a true story. Yeah,
I believe it.
Say I believe it.
I really liked your video, Lewis.
Oh yeah, Lewis did a great video on this. That's right, I watched it.
It was great.
It's the
I loved
the
it.
Classic junkyard POV with just the two hands and whatever it is we're showing. All right,
we're still trying to work out whose hands they are.
Yeah, I pretty much ripped that whole thing off Ashens, the YouTuber.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a fan of his too. Yeah.
Maybe I'll be kicking myself eventually, but I guess they'll be available for wider distribution.
Yeah.
I actually didn't back it, but only because, I mean, you guys know, I mean, I buy too much, but I buy virtually any like niche aftermarket product for any of the dozen or so old machines that I love. And the Dreamcast is at the top of the mountain, right? Mm-hmm. But I can't foresee myself ever actually putting one of these kits on a VMU. Like, I have a bunch of VMUs that are in really good shape. I like the official branding, and now I have a couple of VM2s, and then, you know, 8-bit mods will have their aftermarket VMU eventually also. And so I don't want to say it was like poor timing on VGNY's part, not at all. I'm not insulting them. I think it's an awesome thing that they did, especially the high quality injection molding. But to me, it would be a lot Well, I'd be more interested, let's say, with VM2 and then whatever 8-bit mod solution is one day, having different shells for those as they become more of like, mm-hmm. you know, the actual daily drivers.
But
that's just me. I realize I am not everybody.
I have no idea how it works with that sort of thing, but I don't know if, especially with the VM2, it's so close in so many ways that would it be possible for them to kind of like work together and get some of these spot-on cases?
That would be cool.
I bet the internals are totally different, but yeah, they could work together, I guess. Maybe that'd be something cool. Or maybe like, you know, like changeable faceplates. Nah, that's a bit too Nokia 3310, isn't it?
I was going to say, you're definitely right that it could be done.
It definitely could be done. I think that would be a really cool way to like breathe even more life into the VM2. I agree with you, Derek. It is a bit, it's funny, you know, we've got a real VM2 like wave going on right now. We've got We've got two companies making a new VMU, and then these guys are making the shells. There's a lot of VMU attention going on, which is cool, but that means it's competitive.
Yeah.
It's just a term like buses, isn't it? You wait all day for a bus or for a VMU and then three come along at once.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's kind of the scenario here, isn't it? I think there's a lot of potential here for, like, as you say, the branding. There's a purple one here, and that would just look so cool with like a little Harley Quest logo on it.
Yeah.
I think that would be awesome. Yes.
No hints there at all about possible collaborations that people could come up with.
They've confirmed that they will be in the future producing like special editions of indie games with custom VMUs. Is there any indie games on the Dreamcast that you'd like to see, other than Harley Quest, a special limited edition VMU for anything in particular?
Flea.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah.
That probably would happen as well. I mean, I'm a big Xeno Crisis guy, so I'd love a Xeno Crisis one. That would be super cool. Like a red one, like a transparent red Xeno Crisis one. That would be sick.
Blood red. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
That's just my character after every first 2 minutes on that game.
Yeah.
Say, I vote Izzy for indie VMU.
Yeah, that would be very cool. That would be nice. Cool.
The purple one as well would probably work, mm-hmm. right?
I was going to say that would suit purple.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so they haven't confirmed what the big game is yet, so we'll have to wait and see. I believe they said they were going to, you know, after the campaign ended, it would be fairly soon. So maybe, you know, before this podcast goes out, they will drop that news about which game it is. But we'll have to wait and see. Speaking of other games and Flea, we mentioned Flea. Flea 2 was kickstarted, as was Super Kamba. Both of these games, both NES-based games that have Dreamcast. I know Derek's going to like cringe if I say ports.
Tread carefully.
Dreamcast versions, yeah. And they both of those Kickstarters launched on the same day. So I woke up, I was like, I need to make an article about Flea 2. And then by the end of the day, I'd like mashed it together with a Super Kamba bit as well. So it's like became a double article. I did back Flea 2. I got in there early. I grabbed myself one of the Flea plushes, which were sold out as part of the Kickstarter.
Ooh, nice.
I think they're not going to be made after that. So I got in there and got that. So did anyone else here back these?
I did for Flea 2. Though I will say, as like the biggest Flea fan, sorry, Lewis, but I already had the plush before the Kickstarter.
Oh, you're a bigger fan than me.
No, I just have Evercade.
Ah, nice.
Mike's got fleas. There we go. You heard it here first, folks.
What about you, Harvey?
I haven't actually backed anything in a while.
Yeah.
The last thing I backed was Harley Quest. I was tempted to back Flea 2, but I haven't actually played Flea 1 yet. I know.
Yeah, I
should
that.
Play it. But no, I'm, and also I'm kind of like, I don't really kickstart stuff very often, very much. I really like, I like to just buy it later.
Yeah.
I've got loads of indie games, like the physicals, and I've always bought them afterwards.
Yeah, I could get some stipulations with people backing Kickstarters. I think they can often be a little bit kind of worrying for some people. Like a lot of people sometimes will go, well, why do you have to kickstart it? Why couldn't you just release it normally? But something like the VGMY VMU thing, like they said that the reason they went to Kickstarter rather than selling it normally, because obviously they do sell games normally, they don't kickstart them, was kind of a way to gauge how many people would be interested. So I get that, but obviously there are certain Kickstarters that didn't see the light of day, and yeah, so I could understand why.
Yeah, it's not just Kickstarter either, it's the crowdfunding in general. I've done very, very few. Trying to think now, I think it was Bloodstained on originally for the Vita was what I kickstarted it for, but that one turned out well. And then but outside of that, I've done Flea 2 now. The VM2 on Indiegogo just had to be done, but they were so far on the proof of concept anyway.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, Harley Quest, I think, is actually the only other game I've ever kickstarted.
Yeah, I think there's certain, like, particularly like with Flea 2, it's like, I know Alistair Lowe's going to deliver that, you know, like, yes, he's delivered plenty of games before, you know, he's clearly very passionate. So it's got, like, I kind of knew I had no issues. Same with, like, Super Camber as well, like, you know, Nape Games have delivered many games before, and so, you know, you can kind of trust them to pull through. But yeah, I can understand why people would have their issues.
Does anyone know much about Super Camber? I've read a little bit about it, but I don't know much about it. Is it a reboot of an older game, or is it a completely new game?
Yeah, it's about a banana superhero who isn't Banana Man. Who
heresy.
Yeah, it's like a platformer where you play as a little banana person who is a hero with a sword. and yeah, I believe like the way Nape Games works is that they have these kind of like Flea, I guess. They have these different universes that all kind of link together. So this is like the start of a new universe starring these characters for Nape Games. But I believe like the thing that was a bit kind of confusing about the Kickstarter when I first was looking at it was they also want to do like a game on PC, and then there was a stretch goal for, I think it was Switch. And so they were kind of crowdfunding multiple games, and one of them happened to be Dreamcast. So kind of interesting way of doing it. But yeah, that's, yeah, Super Camber.
I think that's when I get a little bit more hesitant, because it's like, oh, if you Kickstarters, we might make a game for something you want. It kind of needs to be over the line already, really, for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of that, there was a Kickstarter. We won't go into it because I feel like we'd be beating a dead horse at this point. But the creator of Silver Falls basically came out with this campaign where he was like, I'm going to make this RPG, and it's going to be on all these consoles if you get stretch goals. And you know what? Like, the guy seems very talented and incredibly passionate. I just think that, like, the thing that kind of made me not want to back that was if we reach this stretch goal, there might be a Dreamcast version. And it's like, well, I want the Dreamcast version. I don't really want the standard, you know, Steam or Switch version.
I think was that the one where they were all different versions as well? So it's like each game was kind of optimized for the format. So it's like, pick one, see how that goes, and then maybe from there you can branch out.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the other stuff that developer's done, and, you know, they are really talented and very, you know, I mean, they literally kickstarted and delivered a Silver Falls game for the Pokemon Pocket Mini. Like, that is the most random, obscure thing ever.
Oh, I forgot about that thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you forgot about it because, you know.
I used to have one, though.
I know, yeah, they're like a super cool little device, but like, that's the first time I ever heard someone think, I'm going to develop a game for this, you know.
It's gangster.
Crazy. Yeah, exactly. That's super cool. So if anyone was going to do this, it was them. But unfortunately, like, I guess just, yeah, unfortunately the Kickstarter didn't reach any kind of goal in the end. But hopefully they can go back to the drawing board and, you know, restart. And you know what, I even reached out to the creator and I said, you know, if you ever need help, you know, the Dreamcast community, there's so many people who will help you with your game, you know, getting it made and over the line. So yeah, so I made sure to let them know that they're welcome if they do want to put a new game on the Dreamcast.
No, you said, but Junkyard's got to have exclusive review copies.
Exactly. Yeah, exclusive version, you know, with all our faces in
with it. With a VMU.
With a VMU, yeah. anyway, we've brought it up quite a few times already on this episode, but Harley Quest, another Kickstarted game that you guys mentioned there. So it's now going to be self-published by Ross's new indie game publisher, Orc Face Studios. And I just put up an article last night, and I chatted to Ross a little bit about this studio, and it seems really cool. I don't know if you guys had got a chance to have a look at that. Like, it seems like it's going to be possibly the new face of Dreamcast indie games going forward.
It could be.
Yeah, I was checking out the website. It's cool. It's exciting.
A lot of people don't know this, but Ross named that after his uncle Orc, nicest guy in the world. But man, just butt ugly. But
really?
He's honoring. No, I made that up. But,
sorry, I'm so gullible.
Sorry, I've just got my head in my hands at the moment. Harvey, how did you fall for that?
I don't know. I think it's the glass of wine I'm drinking, probably.
I think it's just Derek's just that charming.
It's
like
convincing.
That, yeah.
If it has an American twang, it just sounds more legitimate, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
that's what everybody here says. I love how there's that totally complimentary relationship between the accents. Oh, an Englishman said it. It sounds official.
Yeah. That is how it is.
I will say this about the Kickstarters and like HarleyQuest, for example. If there's any developer who's actually writing code for the machine itself, so whether it's Mega Drive, well, you don't really see Saturn Kickstarters, maybe not yet, but anyone doing anything on the Mega Drive, PC Engine, Dreamcast, if they're writing code for a game to be, you know, natively run on that platform, I'm almost 99% of the time just going to back it. I mean, it's one of those things where I really want to support the development ecosystem. And that's not to disparage, like, you know, the Fleas of the world where the Fleas of the world, the games like Flea, where they're like, oh yeah, it's a NES emulator bundled, runs on Dreamcast. Like, that's cool in and of itself. Right. But the ones where they say, hey, I'm setting out to write a game from scratch, optimized for this platform, to me, that is something worth backing almost every time. And it has the added benefit. Yeah, I'm glad you agree. There's the added benefit of a lot of the lessons that get learned along the way. Everybody else in that scene developing, you know, indie or homebrew software, you know, they often get to reap those benefits as well. So optimizations or updates to libraries, things like that. There's a lot more to it sometimes. And I just think it's the coolest thing in the world. And anybody who says, like, yeah, I'm going to pour hours and hours into this, you know, years into this for an old machine that you love to death. It's like the Fry meme, shut up and take my money. Here you go.
Yeah. I was a bit like that when I saw Ross's, like, you know, I don't know as much anything about development, really, or as much as you, Derek. But I've never really thought about the distinction before. But I'm after hearing that, I'm really glad that I backed it. And I loved he did little devlogs on YouTube leading up to vlogs leading up to the Kickstarter. And he just seems like a really earnest, passionate guy. And I just thought, my money's safe with you. And I really like his concept. And the Orc Face website, you know, you jump on it. And, you know, you've got a place where you can buy the games. They offer development services and also funding and publishing for other people. So it's right off the bat, they're like putting their hand out for other people who are developing games for the Dreamcast or other retro systems. And I think it's brilliant. And they refer to their in-house engine. Derek, can you tell us a bit more about that? Do you know much about it?
Just the fact that Ross, like, developed an entire engine from scratch. So he's not using – I mean, there really aren't – what is it? And, you know, I'm a lot more on the
Silverant.
The ROM hacking.
Silverant.
Simulant. Thank you.
That's it.
Yeah. I was just scraping my brain for that term. So thank you, Harvey. Yeah. So, like, there's Simulant Engine, to my knowledge. And like I said, I'm a lot more on, like, the ROM hacking, reverse engineering side of all this stuff. Not so much the actual, you know, development side. But I think Simulant is, like, the only publicly available, like, hey, you can just pick it up and use it engine. Yeah. I mean, I could be wrong, but to see somebody write one from scratch, you know, for their game, I mean, it's awesome. And I think the proper term, by the way, Harvey, is devlogs. No, I'm kidding.
So tell us, does his engine have a cool name?
Oh, does it? I don't know.
Well, in the interview I did with him yesterday, he just referred to it as our 3D engine plus tools. I don't know if that's like 3D engine plus or 3D engine plus tools.
I think it's plus tools. I have been seeing some stuff that there's some really big optimizations going on at the moment.
No way.
I was going to say for Harley Quest, it's like if that comes out at 30 frames a second with what was already on show, that would be stunning.
Yeah,
and
it looks great.
I've been told it could well be 60 by the time it's all finished.
Mike, didn't he say that one of the, or I guess this is easy to verify, I'm embarrassed, I don't remember, but I think one of the Kickstarter tiers, I thought, was you got access to
the source.
Yes, yeah, there's a developer tier, and he was going to open it all up. And I understand there's some more collaboration going on now as well. It does sound like it could be like one of the biggest things to happen in Dreamcast in a decade.
Wow.
You heard it here. Yeah. As far as Orcface Games as a studio, the fact that like you have someone like Ross there at the helm, maybe he's the guy and that studio is the studio that, you know, some Dreamcast developer who's unsure about publishing their game or maybe they need a bit of help to get it over the line, or someone just has like a really great idea and they really want to get into developing. I think that's like great that he, you know, and I'll link the blog post in the show notes, just the idea that like this is a studio that can help them kind of see their games come out for real. I mean, that's what we all want, right? So I'm excited personally.
Yeah, games.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, Ross, he works for a developer full time and like quite a well-to-do one. So that even adds more confidence to his abilities in a professional capacity. So it's brilliant.
I believe it was a Ninja Kiwi. I think he worked for them. I think he's now just developing Harley Quest full time, I believe.
You better be. I've crowdfunded it. That's what we all is doing now.
Is there a rough release date? I think there was one. I can't remember it.
I reckon it'd be like towards the end of this year.
Nice.
But yeah,
see,
I mean,
I'm just keep it in the oven as long as it needs.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I think he will. I think you know, Ross obviously is very passionate and he'll make sure it's the best it can be. Moving on to the new homebrew / indie section. I know people out there maybe aren't so keen on the term homebrew. When I say it on the blog, I don't mean it in a mean way. I just, you know, you're brewing something up in your home.
See, the technical term is actually bedroom coder.
Bedroom
coder. From the 1980s
coder.
On the ZX Spectrum. Yeah. The Commodore 64. So
bedroom coders of the world, yeah.
Homebrew just sounds like really bad 70s beer.
Yeah.
What do you prefer to be referred to as, Derek? I don't know. I'm so oblivious to all of this terminology. Like, what would you refer to yourself as? A ROM hacker?
Yeah, I'm neither a home brewer. I am a bedroom. Well, I'm a home office coder, but that's because I code for fun, all kinds of things. But I think most people who work on software for old game machines or modern ones that aren't for sale, I think homebrew isn't really like a dirty word. It's pretty ubiquitous. But I do like bedroom coder. It sounds cooler. Sounds a lot more Neo from the Matrix.
It's because in 80s Britain, you didn't have home offices.
Makes sense.
The luxury of America.
Don't even make me brag about the central AC blowing through my home office right now as we speak.
Don't make me brag about the 16 degree air coming through the window right now.
Yeah, AC, what's that? Yeah. So, speaking of bedroom coders, I mean, he might do it in a bedroom, he might not. Frogball, we talked about him last time we had a news episode. Frogball is a force to be reckoned with. They're bringing out all these different videos of his Crash Bandicoot running on the Saturn. Here's what else have they done? That here's Final Fantasy VII. Here's Metal Gear Solid 2. Yeah, Metal Gear Solid 2 on the Dreamcast. That was the only game that they've sort of done a showcase on the Dreamcast of, other than the one we're about to get to, which is Star Wars Dreams of the Rebellion. Imagine the music playing as I say that.
Oh, please edit that in, Lewis. That'd be so good.
So, Dreams of the Rebellion is based on Rogue Squadron, I guess. It's not quite the exact same thing, but Frogball was really cool to send me a demo of it. And the demo I played was you're basically in the X-Wing and you're shooting TIE fighters as you're like trailing behind the Star Destroyer. God, you know what? My wife said to me, we were watching the Obi-Wan show, and I referred to a Jawa. I said, oh, I did a Jawa. And she goes, how do you know the name of that thing? You're such a like geek about Star Wars. I was like, everyone knows that. So I'm just here randomly saying these terms, and I just kind of worry that if someone isn't into Star Wars, they're just like, what the hell is he talking about? but yeah, so yeah, you're trailing behind the Star Destroyer, and it just looks really, really good. Like, you've got the kind of effect of the stars coming towards you. And the bit that, like, kind of blew my mind, and it's really weird, like, saying, like, my mind's being blown by something on the Dreamcast all these years later. But it's the bit where, like, the TIE fighters, like, travel off screen, and they're, like, proper 3D. And I was like, damn, this is, like, so cool.
I'm watching it now. Well, is this, just to be clear, I don't know anything about Star Wars games. Is this a pre-existing Star Wars game that's been ported?
No. I will say with Frogball, I think people are misunderstanding what they're actually trying to achieve.
Yeah.
They're not trying to rip off games or, like, make tech demos. It's more a proof of concept. I'm probably completely wrong here, but I believe it's a proof of concept, like with Crash Bandicoot you were saying. It's like, oh, actually the Saturn's not well known for transparencies.
Yeah.
But here's my proof of concept that shows the transparencies off.
Yeah.
I see.
Like Metal Gear Solid 2. Well, the Dreamcast could never handle Metal Gear Solid 2. I mean, for a lot of people, that demo of Metal Gear Solid in 2001, I think it was, that was like, that. This is why I need to wait for a PlayStation 2. Mm-hmm. It looks phenomenal. And so I think what Frogball's actually doing is going, oh, actually, guys, you can make this look like this on here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so people are looking for full-fledged games from these tech demos, I guess you'd kind of call them. That's what they call the Amiga scene. But I think that's probably the best way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It does definitely look like that. You're right.
And Star Wars Dreams of the Rebellion is probably the closest that I think he's getting to a like an actual kind of release that we can play. Like I said, I played a bit of it.
He's wild. Frog, I mean, it's like actually insane what this guy is pulling off. It's, I mean, Mike, you're 100% right.
To give us like an idea of how hard the Metal Gear Solid one to me seems crazy. Is that the craziest one to you? Is that the kind of, has he done the impossible?
A lot of people say the transparencies in the Crash Bandicoot, one of the crazy things, because Saturn can't do that, you know, fact.
Quote unquote fact is one of the most horrible narratives repeated about the beloved Saturn. But yeah. I mean, I mean, Harvey, it's like he, so on the Dreamcast side, he has the benefit of using Simulant Engine, and like, don't get me wrong, Dreams of the Rebellion and the Metal Gear Solid stuff, like, it all looked great, and I'm sure he optimized and changed things to make it run better. But to to do some of this work on the Saturn, where you basically have the Joe engine from Johannes Fetz, and you have what's the other one? The Z-Treme engine, which is a little bit more like 3D geared, like the Sonic Z-Treme demo ran off of that. I think, isn't that created by XL2, the guy who did?
Yeah.
What was? I can't believe I'm not remembering the first person shooter, even though I played it extensively when you released it. Oh my gosh, I cannot believe I can't remember it.
Go on, anyway. Type it on your loud keyboard and fire.
No, I dare not. People be like, what is that? And off the quote. Yeah, it'll be a quote from Home Alone. That was the sound of a tool chest coming down the stairs. Oh, man. Yeah, but it's just wild. Like, it really, really is. And a lot of it is, yeah, it's like proof of concept, like Mike said, and tech demo. But it's also, you know, these are all coding exercises. People out there who just kind of consume these creations forget that the people who do it because they love it, like, they have to cut their teeth, they have to learn, and it's not all about, you know, I made this thing for everybody. Sometimes it's, I made this thing for me, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, he just woke up one day and was like, you know what? I want to prove to people that Metal Gear Solid could run on the Sega Saturn. Like, that's cool.
And that you could have the pinup models in the lockers. And
yeah. Yeah. Just to add for the Dreamcast games that he has showcased these, like, demos or proof of concepts of, they are built using a few kind of tools, but the main one, obviously, that we're quite familiar with as, well, at least myself as a non-coder, was Luke Benstead's Simulant Engine. So, you know, if you ever wanted to see what the Simulant Engine is capable of, then feast your eyes on this, because, you know, it looks incredible. Like I said, my mind was blown when that TIE fighter zoomed off the screen. Yeah, it was incredible. Next up, we have Cyborg Force by Neo Byte Force. I imagine Derek and Mike, you'll have some stuff to say about this.
I did purchase this, and namely because, I mean, well, like I said earlier, the Neo Geo version, right, natively developed for the platform. So that was one reason I wanted the game. But of course, also the Dreamcast version, natively developed for, you know, the Dreamcast hardware. I will say this, and I don't know if it's just like a European thing, but dear Lord, this game is so hard. I mean, it looks great, but it is so hard. I really think that, and like, I love playing games.
I don't
games.
Think it's a European thing.
Well, it just reminds me of like these old like Amiga developers that would say, I'm going to make this game as hard as humanly possible just so that people can like gloat when they finish it. But maybe that's just a misperception. I could be completely wrong about that.
Yeah, I recall asking Mike, like, oh, you know, what do you want to do a review of it maybe for the blog? And you were like, yeah, if I even get anywhere with it.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah,
it's
brutal. Like I say, a crazy Australian guy pointed me in its direction. And then the thing from that is like an easier difficulty, because you can pick difficulties, but the easiest difficulty is still rock hard. Oh. I don't know if it's one of those trolls where if you pick the next difficulty up, it's actually easier. Because I do think some games have done that before, where the easy mode is actually harder than the medium mode.
They also do the thing a lot of the time, don't they, where it's like, if you do the easy mode, after a certain amount of levels, it goes, you can't see the rest, now go play the harder mode.
Yeah, there's nothing that annoys me more than that, to
oh,
be fair.
Oh, God, yeah.
However, I've found out today there is a cheat mode.
Ooh, okay.
So I'm going to delve into that a bit more this weekend, I think, because it's a bank holiday weekend in the UK, and I don't think I've got anything else on. So I might actually see every level of Cyborg Force.
Please do share that, because I'd love to actually complete this game that I purchased for two consoles.
Yeah, I can edit this bit out, guys, if you don't want anyone to know that you're cheaters.
I don't mind people knowing that I'm cheating. I yeah. just don't want to spoil it for people that don't want to know there's a cheat mode.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Derek, I'll definitely let you know. And if in a bit we can take out, I understand it's that even while you're selecting your character. So it's easier than the Konami code.
Yeah,
I love it. And I have no qualms with being labeled as a video game cheater.
No, I even told Ian he can call it mic mode. You know, just try and get an easy difficulty on there because, my God, it's so hard.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me feel better. I'm looking for. I want to give it a go, but
it's definitely worth having a look at. It's so refreshing, and shoot 'em ups are brilliant. Don't get me wrong. It's just so nice to have a run and gun game that's native on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, it looks cool, man. It looks really, really cool. And you can get it for, was it 20 euros for just the CDI at the moment on the website?
I don't know. Mine's on a USB stick. However, I do believe it will be coming to a pressed CD in the near future.
Yeah, so they teased that on their Twitter, but I believe you got kind of a proper confirmation on that, didn't you, Mike?
Yes, it's currently going through some pre-production.
Excellent, yeah.
Exciting. I'll definitely get a copy of that.
But it's definitely worth picking up. I don't know if it's going to be in the thing, but, you know, the cheat mode, so you can say you've finished it, apparently, even if you're rubbish like me. But I do think they need to think about just doing a mic mode and just, you know, where you just don't die.
Yeah. Or like... Does it at least have sort of like unlimited continues or anything like that? Like a metal slug where I just keep...
Yeah. No, you can't just keep throwing coins in.
Yeah.
Because it's for the Neo Geo home console, not for the MVS.
Right,
that's the right,
right
one, isn't it, Derek?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's designed... I haven't had a chance to play it properly yet, but I think you're limited to the number of continues.
That's a really good question. I should try... putting my AES into MVS mode, because there's no, if you don't know anybody out there listening or on the panel, like there's no technical difference between an AES ROM and an MVS ROM. It's actually the console that dictates the mode with which or under which the game will run. So I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, I hadn't even thought, like, maybe try it in MVS mode, see if you can use credits.
Just keep throwing quarters at it.
Yeah.
So is the difference between those two, one was for domestic use and one was for kind of an arcade setting?
Exactly. And then they did make different format cartridges because they did not want arcade cabinet owners to purchase the cheaper home versions and just swap them in there. But there are adapters.
It's kind of similar, actually, to the Naomi and the Dreamcast in terms of architecture.
Before we move on, I just want to ask about, so you ordered this and it came in a USB in like a...
I've just got it right here. It comes in a beautiful little clamshell case. Yeah, it's a just a little USB drive included, and it's Cyborg Force just laser etched onto the metal part.
That's really cool.
Nice. That's cool. I don't think we've seen anything like that, like with a physical Dreamcast version, have we?
No, it was one of those things, like I say, when I was given the link to it, it's like, well, I've just got to get that for the sake of it.
Yeah.
It actually came in a box that mirrors what they used to ship the Neo Geo cartridges out in.
Oh, the big boys. Yeah.
So they've really stuck to that, and then you get like the marquees and things in the box as well. Well, you did it. Unfortunately, that version sold out, but hopefully they'll kind of keep that for any physical CD version for the Dreamcast.
Yeah, yeah. You just mentioned crazy Australian Ian Michael. He's an absolute powerhouse in our scene, and he has been tweaking a Neo Geo emulator, Dream Neo, and I've heard that it offers pretty flawless emulation on Dreamcast. I don't know if you guys want to weigh in on this and let the people know.
It's a great option for the Dreamcast, simply because of the fact that those Neo Geo CD games being disc-based, I mean, it makes it friendlier for, you know, emulation in this case, where there's not like intense like data seeking and such, like from a ROM. So it's really cool that, you know, it's almost like some of these are so seamlessly emulated. It's almost like some people out there think that they are they're like a Thomas Wave conversions. They're like, oh, it's a conversion or a port of the Neo Geo CD game. That's how good it is in some cases.
Mm-hmm. So a few years ago, I really, really liked the idea of having a Neo Geo. And I think it was Play Live in Blackpool I went to. And there was a vendor had a Neo Geo AES for £500. Obviously, at the time, I was like, I can't afford that. But I went to it again in Manchester about a year or two later. I'm like, right, if I see a Neo Geo, I'm getting one because I really like Neo Turf Masters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's never seen a console to buy since. But the what Ian's been doing lately is getting more and more games working on the Neo Geo CD emulator. So I believe it was Art of Fighting he's been working on. But it's never worked, at least on Dreamcast, because of some BIOS writing or something. I don't know. I'm not a coder like Harvey. This is all over my head sort of stuff, as Derek will also say, because he tells me off in the chat, just update the firmware. But
I mean, in all fairness, just update the firmware, Mike. I mean, come on.
I tried turning it off and on again. What more do you want?
Clean the gunk out of the mouse. Clean the gunk out of the mouse.
But yeah, so he's with getting Art of Fighting working on the thing, he discovered some weird write to the BIOS or something. And it meant that he's able to get other games working on it that also haven't worked, like Windjammers. Mm-hmm. But the main thing I noticed was Neo Turf Masters. I absolutely adore the game. I think if anybody's not played it, seriously give it a try. I think it was like £5 on the Switch store. But it's just like the golf game should not work. They should not be fun. But this one is incredible.
I think some of the best games ever made are golf games, honestly. I think the sport itself is boring as anything, but the games are sick. Like,
they just work, don't they?
Yeah, like very there's something arcadey about that sport, I guess because of the way the points are scored and stuff, yeah.
Which, yeah, Neo Turf Masters was developed as an arcade game, and it is one of the most beautiful 2D games you will see. The sprite work is incredible on it, and it almost looks 3D from every angle it's played at, but obviously the Neo Geo doesn't render any 3D. Mm-hmm. To get to the point, the Dreamcast Neo Geo CD emulation now is at a point where I think it runs better than it did on the Switch. It felt more responsive. It's just phenomenal. And it's really exciting what's happening with the Neo Geo side on Dreamcast. I don't understand how a Dreamcast can emulate it, to be honest.
So Ian Michael, he's done the tweaks to get this working. Yeah,
he's been going into the ones and zeros and getting down to the wire and the metal,
hacking into the mainframe.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of very impressive coding. There's this new showcase, another visual showcase of something running on the Dreamcast on YouTube from a creator called Miguel, and this is called Spiral, which is and it's the title of the video. If you want to look for it, is Spiral, a 3D game engine for Dreamcast. And I'm looking at this, and it looks bloody amazing. Like, I don't know if you guys are sort of feeling what I'm feeling here. Like, it looks really, really good. It's just kind of like this camera going around this room with this little character in the middle and stuff floating around, and just the sort of the lighting and the way everything looks is really good.
Yeah, I'm watching it now. It's very cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it says 3D models and scenes exported from Blender, bone animations, static vertex lighting, dynamic vertex lighting, infinite points of light, but not simultaneous. And it depends on the vertex number, PNG textures with transparency and JPG textures, text fonts in TTF format. That's in the YouTube description for anyone who's into that kind of thing. All sounds very fancy and exciting to me. But yeah, looks compelling.
I mean, this looks as good as, like, you know, a contemporary Dreamcast game, I would say. Yeah.
What's crazy to me is, so using PNG for textures that might have transparency, and then, you know, JPEGs for things that don't, like, ordinarily, and I'm no Dreamcast development expert, but ordinarily, if somebody were to come to me and say, you think I could write an optimized engine that didn't use, you know, like PowerVR graphics or something similar to that, which is, you know, catered to Dreamcast's actual video hardware. I'd say, why on earth would you think using PNGs or JPEGs for texturing polygons or environments would, like, that's going to be horrible overhead. It's going to run like crap. But like, yeah, here we are.
I think that's the exciting part, isn't it? It's starting to get the tools that use modern techniques and technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you put it in the computer, my Bob, and it spits out 1999 stuff.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's so well optimized that it can run higher resolution textures?
Well, right? It's not necessarily the resolution or like the fidelity of the images. It's the format. So like with the Dreamcast PowerVR hardware, PowerVR formatted textures, you can actually cater them very, very specifically so that they can, really improve game performance. Like there are people, like take for example, that Dead or Alive 2 SD remaster. The guy working on that, he's tweaking these PowerVR graphics to like really push as much as he can out of them, and it complements the hardware. But you need a lot of overhead in code to actually interpret and display graphics like PNGs or JPEGs in a way that is not going to make the game run sluggishly. So obviously the code is like extremely, extremely efficient if it can do that. And even the use of TrueType fonts, TTF, like to use TrueType fonts and to have everything displayed on screen, like actually be stored as a TrueType font, like there's overhead there also.
So it's an interesting thing with that, because even going back to the Neo Geo emulation, I believe Ian's starting to tap into the PVR to kind of pick up a bit of the slack from the CPU.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the right way of putting it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just basically getting the PowerVR chip to actually take on some of the burden, means that although it's a old 90s CPU, it's not having to do as much work to get the same stuff done. And I think a lot of the early Dreamcast development, it's been very CPU bound.
Gotcha. Cool.
The early Dreamcast, like indie and homebrew development, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of it has. It's cool that they're starting to get a lot more down to the metal with optimizing it, because when it comes to graphics, I mean, it's like night and day when you look at something running entirely using software versus hardware.
You can generally tell, that's an indie release, and I'm hoping we're starting to get to that point where, there's these full original releases that don't look as, going back to Harley Quest. I think that's going to hit a point, from what I'm hearing, where it's going to look better than like your typical Dreamcast, at least like sort of port from the PS1 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
This is exciting stuff. Lewis, has Miguel been in touch, or have you heard,
I haven't actually contacted this person, but we'll have to reach out to them. Yeah, I'm really intrigued as to what they'll do next. I am subscribed to the channel because I was like, I saw that. And
I'm
like,
going to do that now. I just wonder if they're interested in making games, or just kind of proof of concept stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if this, what we're seeing in this video, could be turned into some kind of game, kind of gave me the vibe of like maybe like Evil Twin or something. Like it kind of looks a bit creepy.
Yeah.
To get really geeky with it, it's the lighting that impresses me the most in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just like all angles of this clip that we're watching, like it looks really great. So
do let me know if you get a hold of him, Lewis or Harvey. He's a really busy guy. He's I read he's on tour with his band. Like he's also a musician. So he's he's got a what is it?
I don't believe anything you say, Derek, after last time.
No, Beatles impersonation band. Look it up. They're called Miguel My Bell. I swear to God, look it up.
Nah, I'm not believing it.
No, that's a really good one. That was better than the last one.
Too sneaky.
So good.
Don't make me sing it. Fantastic. I'll do it.
Yeah, come on. I want it. I want proof.
Not a chance.
Right, so Next is a little bit of something from Retro Sumus.
Sumus, yeah. I suppose like these next two are kind of like, well, we can kind of speed through them a little bit because they are very exciting, but it's all very like early days at the moment. So Retro Sumus, who obviously, speaking of games that, you know, push the hardware, Xenocider, you know, really awesome 3D kind of Space Harrier kind of game that they brought out probably a few years ago now. Bloody hell, time flies. It feels like it only came out recently, but it is a bit older. And so, yeah, they've teased us that they're making a new game. And ironically, when we're talking about how the Dreamcast is pushing boundaries, the thing that they've teased so far is looks to be kind of almost like 16-bit looking. And there's another clip on their Twitter as well. Yeah, it looks very 16-bit. And so, yeah, I guess they're going for something a little bit different. But you know what? They're a very talented developer. So whatever they do next is going to be cool. I will say this just to confirm. It will be on the Dreamcast, even though it doesn't look... Like I say, it looks 16-bit, but it will be on the Dreamcast. So I just want to confirm that here before anyone wonders why we're covering this particular topic. So next we have Pixel Heart, or Josh Prod, obviously quite a very prolific indie developer for the Dreamcast, one of the sort of more older ones that has continued to this day, that has kept going. And they have said that this year they should be releasing four new Dreamcast games. We have no idea what they are, but I think I'm quite excited to see what they come out with. I know the last kind of batch, they released loads all at the same time, and I think, you know, there were some really great ones in there, like Rockatron, for example, but others, you know, not so much. So it is good for them to kind of, I guess, reduce the output a little bit and just have four games rather than like loads. So, yeah, so four new games coming from Pixel Heart this year. Mike, I know you're a big buyer of indie games. What do you think about... Do you like the idea that it's just four from Pixel Heart rather than like a massive batch of them?
I really like that. I don't have to spend so much money all in one go again.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did do that as a kind of catch-up because, like I say, I like collecting PAL stuff, and they do stuff in PAL cases, so it's like need, and then a few started selling out on the older releases. I did manage to grab Stormwind.
Nice. Well, yeah, so like I say, I think it's, you know, if it's just four games, I think hopefully it's quality over quantity with them. Stop the presses. This is Lewis in editing mode now, just recording this to add a little bit of an update since we recorded the episode. Pixel Heart have gone to Kickstarter looking for funding for a 2D action platformer that is a homage to Ghouls and Ghosts and Metal Slug called Gladmort. There is a demo that you can download to play. It's already blasted past its funding goal, and it did so on the day the Kickstarter launched. Obviously, there's going to be a Dreamcast version, but it'll also be on Neo Geo. Seemed like we talked a lot about Neo Geo this episode. Anyway, back to it. But I suppose moving on, and this is, I mentioned this earlier, there is a topic today that has some involvement from Derek here, and this is Rainbow Cotton. There is a port for modern consoles. This is a game on the Dreamcast that was exclusive to Japan. It's a beautiful looking game on the Dreamcast, although it's often been discussed that it has its issues, but it's been remastered and improved by the developer Andreas Scholl. And yeah, so I'm quite excited because I believe he was saying that, you know, that he's going to improve like the issues that the original game has. So it'd be quite cool for this to possibly be the definitive version of this game. And obviously, if anyone's been keeping track of fan translations, Derek brought out a Rainbow Cotton fan translation. And I want Derek to be able to tell us how he was kind of involved, if as much as he can, obviously, with this modern port.
Yes, I will say for sure what I can. But just to comment, this is like an actual from the ground up, like redevelopment of the game. It's yeah, I mean, they had you know, source code or whatever, and aided with you know, disassembling the original Dreamcast version, but it's essentially a completely rewritten game. So it's not even so much a correct. I mean, it is going to be a correction of the game's flaws, but one of those cases where, you know, he was able to really kind of mold this how he saw fit. So Andreas is doing awesome work. But basically, I can't remember how long ago it was now. It's been a while. The developer found my personal website, dreamcastforever.com. And on the very bottom, it says, on the contact page is a bunch of ways to get in touch with me. This developer found the very bottom that says, you can email me on my Dreamcast. It's an email address. They emailed my Dreamcast email address that I must check that thing like twice a year.
Yeah. No.
Cool. Yeah, but I never saw it though, Harvey.
So how long did it take you to pick up that email, dude?
Well, I never did. And then all of a sudden, Andreas, I was in a mutual Discord with him and he messaged me, like direct messaged me and was like, hey, gave me the lowdown. I was like, oh, by all means, I'm not ignoring you guys. That's a tremendous honor. Like I'm not at all ignoring. Here's my actual proper email address. And, I'm not saying anything that isn't been public at this point, but all of the subtitle timings for the FMVs, any types of textures or graphics that were translated and re-rendered, things like that, all of that stuff is coming from the translation patch itself. But this was a game that I actually didn't do like a lot of actual code changes at all. I didn't do a whole lot of assembly hacking for this one. It was namely Patrick from Sega Saturn Shiro subtitling the FMVs. And
shout
then,
out to Patrick.
Yep. Shout out to Patrick and Dan Thrax, who worked on like Bulk Slash and Stellar Assault, things like that. He's the one who used a tool from, of all places, the BBC that teaches you exactly how to time subtitles so the human eye can read them.
Nice.
What?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, you better believe it, kid. And then, what's her name? Natsume did the actual translation piece. And it's a huge honor. There was some type of bounty for these efforts, and I never thought that would ever happen in a million years. So it's really cool. And as I understand it, our names are all in the credits, and I'll be given a few copies. Originally, when they're like, yeah, we'll send you a version for the Switch, I was like, okay, I guess I can put it on the old shelf, but now I can play it.
You can play it, yeah. That'll be pretty cool, yeah, to play that and obviously have some involvement with it. The end of our list, but I suppose like seeing as we've talked a little bit about the VM2 already, but I know Derek's got one. Derek, you were involved with testing for the VM2, and then Mike, you've got yours. Yep. You need to update the firmware. Don't forget.
Yeah, Derek keeps telling me.
Harvey, I believe you've got one. Is it still pre-order? He's still waiting for yours.
I'm waiting. I think I'm number 2,530 something. I am waiting.
I think you're quite close now then.
Am I? I'm really excited about it. I'm most excited to try play some VMU games and then realize they're shit and then you know, have one evening playing VMU games and then realize they're crap. Well, everyone tells me that's what's going to happen, but I'm determined to try and enjoy them.
That is what's going to happen. That's what happened to me.
There was quite a good Tetris port on it.
No, the Tetris is actually pretty good. Tetris is good.
Is it? Oh, cool.
I'll send it to you, Harvey, if you want it. I don't know if it's like how easy it is to get, but did you see somebody did like a little Monaco GP VMU minigame
and that's cute.
Posted it on the Dreamcast Talk forums? Yeah.
That's awesome.
I didn't see that. That sounds cool.
I mean, if they're going to make games for the Pokemon Mini, they might as well make them for the VMU.
Yeah, well, they made Pokemon Go, I believe, for the VMU. Yeah.
And it actually, you know, it actually worked. You know, you could walk around, it had GPS, you know, it actually worked.
Well, I don't know if it went that far, but yeah.
No, I'm joking. I'm hoping to get Derek.
You can't pull it off the same, Harvey. You don't have the American accent or authenticity. I did have Snake on the there is a Snake port on the VMU. I remember playing that back at school with the VMU when you got like 2 weeks worth of battery on the CR2032s.
How did you get that port? Was it, where was that from?
You just download them at that point.
Oh, for using the web on your console? Using
the power of the internet on your DreamKey 1.5.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I'm pretty sure that's how it worked anyway. I might just be making it all up now. But
so Derek, Mike, as long-standing owners of the VM2, how is it? Is it your daily driver? Could you see yourself using any other VMU?
So it is. So I've done two videos on my shitty YouTube channel.
It's not shitty. It's not shitty.
I love it. I subscribe.
Yeah, you're not allowed to use that word. It's rubbish.
Is that banned? Is that banned from? Is that on the blacklist of junkyard terms? Are we going to get delisted?
No. You can say shitty all you like.
Okay, okay.
Unless it's about your YouTube channel
or the Dream Pod.
I have a YouTube channel with extremely high production quality and value videos. they really give Spielberg a run for his money. But you know, I did two overviews.
See, positivity.
Yeah, there you go. Just be part of my delusions, everybody. So I think it's obviously fantastic. I'm always telling everybody that. So I use it as the daily in my office because it's very convenient for like a lot of the development and testing stuff where I just need to swap around, save files really quickly, yada, yada. And then, of course, to toy around with the new automatic virtual VMU creation and switching feature that OpenMenu can leverage. So you need OpenMenu. I did a little video on that with some links in the description on how to get it set up.
I still need to watch that.
Oh yeah, check it out. It's only like 10 minutes long or something. It's easy to watch, but that's actually what made me switch over to OpenMenu because it's just such a killer feature. Like it works so seamlessly and backing up the stuff from your OEM VMUs onto the VM2 per each game. So easy, like navigating from open menu, pick the game from the list, exit to BIOS, creates the virtual VMU, put your original VMU into the slot 2 on the controller, copy it, boom. Like it, you can really get it done like very quickly. It's awesome. It's awesome.
So sorry to interrupt you. So the way it works is open menu, the GDMU, that's like a GDMU menu that's different to the basic one that like everyone uses when they first get a GDMU, right?
So the way GDMU works is the old days before there was any menu software, it was just put your games in a numbered folder starting with 01 and you press the little button on the PCB to swap discs to different games. Like obviously the early days of Dreamcast ODEs, it was cool to have anything at all. But then somebody wrote GD menu. I think his name was NeuroAcid. He's not around anymore. But you just put that into folder number 1 and use some software to easily add and remove games from your SD card. And basically it just let you see a selection of all your games, launch them. So open menu is just another piece of software, sits in the 01 folder, talks directly to the GDMU itself to launch the game that you select. And yeah, that's what it is. So it's a little different than something like, like the mode from Terra Onion or some of the other devices where the menu software is like baked into the device. So GDMU is actually really flexible in this regard. And it's one of the reasons we actually have all these options today. It's because it wasn't locked into whatever the developer created. So at one point that was a flaw, like, oh man, no menu. But it's a blessing now because we have all kinds of options. It's great.
I once played a Sega Saturn at like a convention, and they had it, I guess, kind of what you're describing there, Derek, where I had to keep pressing like the lid of the Saturn or something to change the game. And you're like there pressing it. What game's this? Oh, it's, Die Hard Arcade. Oh, what's the next game? Oh, it's some weird game that I don't know the name of because it's in Japanese. You know, you're just pressing it, and like just to get to a game. Is that kind of what you had to do with the Dreamcast with the button on the top? I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. That, oh, man. Thank God for open menu.
Well, menu and then GD menu before it. Yeah. It's been around for a long time. I mean, I think it's like 2016 was when GD menu's first release came out. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a long time.
That's kind of when I started rebuying physical games for the Dreamcast. If I'd have known this was going to be a thing back then, though, I'd have saved loads.
Yeah.
You were saying about this like auto feature where with open menu and a VM2. What's the feature? The killer feature? It's like, sorry, I wasn't keeping up.
No, that's okay. So it's like if you've ever seen what the Mem Card Pro 1 and 2 do for the PlayStation and PlayStation 2. So basically, when you launch a game from open menu, it'll talk mm-hmm. to the VM2, and it says like, hey, here's the unique ID or like the serial ID for this game. Do you have a virtual VMU already, on file, so to speak, for this game? If the VM2 does, it'll just automatically queue it up, and boom, now that game has its own dedicated virtual VMU, so you can never have to think twice about save management. If there isn't already a virtual VMU created for that game, it'll create one on the fly. But what you get from that is you just never, I mean, it's one of those features that sounds cool, and then when you start using it, you just say to yourself, holy shit, I never ever have to worry about save management ever again. Like, I am never going to run out of space. Wow. Yeah.
It's one of those things you didn't need until you had it, and then you could never ever go back to the idea of, well, which VMU actually has the save
factor? Oh, I hate that. That sums up every time I bring out my Dreamcast. I'm like, damn, where is that save? I got like 8 VMUs.
You go through 5 or 6 memory cards just trying to find the save for it. That's exactly what I do. It's every time you load a game, it's the VMU is like it's a fresh, clean VMU just for that game.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like a 100%, 200 block, whatever it is, brand new, fresh VMU. And like what I really love about that too is you think of all those like stupid little games you might just pick up now and then. And every time you do, you go into the options, you set it to easy, you set your continues to the max, and then you play. Mm-hmm. Like with this now, like then that setting is always there. And then you die. Yeah, of course. That's life. But like little things like that, you just take for granted. Like, I never have to worry about these basic settings ever again. As long as they're saved once, like every time I queue that game up, boom, it's there.
And I believe you said there was some kind of relation, Derek, because we have another item on our agenda here. So USB for Maple, this adapter. So Megavolt 85, who did all the Atomos Wave conversions, they've brought out this USB for Maple adapter, and it kind of resulted in a video of our friend PC Wizard playing Unreal Tournament on his Dreamcast with a Wii controller and a nunchuck. I don't know how we went from USB for Maple to that, but I was very intrigued by this video he was showing.
Yeah, it's really cool what Megavolt put together. So actually it's related to the automatic virtual VMU switching on the VM2, because because I was like all in on VM2, and I kept saying, Chris, we got to find a way to like, you got to get in touch with the ODE developers to get them to implement, the transmission of game IDs, because there's no way to have automatic VMU switching if the ODE software does not tell the VM2 like, hey, this is the game I'm loading now. They actually found a really clever workaround on the PlayStation side because of, I might butcher this, but there's some kind of like standard boilerplate code in PlayStation games where there's like a handshake between the game and the memory card before like you even really get into saving your game. And part of that handshake includes the game ID. And once they figured that out, you could even do it with original discs on PlayStation. But anyway, like Megavolt 85, was like the active maintainer of Open Menu that Hayden Kowalczyk started those years ago. And I'm not taking credit for anything other than like doing the Mike Tyson meme here. Like, now Kith, you know, I just said like, guys, work together. You got to make this happen. And he did. They both did. And then Megavolt 85 implemented it in USB for Maple. And it's really awesome. Like, you just plug in a USB, like a hub into the receiver. You put your controller into one port and like a thumb drive or any type of, you know, flash storage medium into the other. And that's where all of your virtual VMUs will live if you use Open Menu and the USB for Maple.
Any flash drive?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm sure there might be some driver issue. I mean, I'm not sure, but I haven't seen anybody come up with any that haven't worked as far as I can
tell.
That's
amazing.
But it's really cool. Yeah.
So I believe PC Wizard bought a thing maybe off Amazon, a wireless controller adapter. So he was showing off he could use his Xbox controller with it, his Wii controller with the nunchuck. Unfortunately, no motion control. Maybe fortunately, actually. But yeah, I mean, it won't beat the fishing controller. But
so there was, I was just checking out the pics of the Twitter posts of these, and there was the original USB adapter, which has got a tiny Raspberry Pi in it, right? And that's what does the kind of the business between the, you know, it does all the thinking. But then I saw PC Wizard post a picture of like an even smaller one with a 3D printed shell. What was that?
Yeah, that's the one that he, because it really just started off as like a design schematic and some firmware from Megavolt. And then it's kind of like the Blue Retro project for the Bluetooth wireless receivers for old game machines. So it's up to, you know, other people to kind of come up with the form factor. So I actually bought one from PC Wizard. I haven't used it yet. I mean, I really don't have much of a use case for it, but I definitely want to toy around with it eventually. So yeah, it's tiny, same thing. Right?
That's right. I was just wondering, cause it's amazing. It was just so tiny sitting in the front there. I want to get one of those. Cause you know, I haven't in ages, but I used to play Quake Online on the Dreamcast, and I love having my Dreamcast on my desk and just using my computer keyboard, my nice mechanical keyboard, and not have to use the crappy Dreamcast keyboard. I know, sacrilege, everyone loves that keyboard.
Take that back.
It's a bit of an old hog.
Yeah. For me, it's the mouse. I have trouble with the mouse more than the keyboard. Anyway, we have one final item here, which I believe you put on, Harvey, and this is the Thundertronics hardware mods. Do you want to run us through these?
Yeah, so this is I forgot his name actually, but somebody's making hardware mods for the Dreamcast, and so far they've made something really cool. I need to just jump to the website to find out the name of it.
I think he just goes by Vegeta, doesn't he?
Yeah, and now all I need to be able to do is spell that. here we go, Thundertronics. So yeah, he's got two products available at the moment. One of them is he calls it a Dreamcast Advanced Controller Board, and the other one is a Thunderdream Dreamcast Power Supply. So the first one solves an age-old issue that everyone has, most people have, with when you boot up your Dreamcast, you'll see the date and time setting because the clock battery in your console has run out of charge. Mm-hmm. And I think this guy's found a solution to a problem that kind of nobody asked for the solution, but it's a bit like the VM2 thing with the auto with not having to manage your saves, but you won't ever have to see that annoying screen ever again for the cost of $35 plus shipping.
Is that really worth it though? Because you got to remember, you boot your Dreamcast up now and you go, wow, I've got to go 25 years into the future.
Yeah. I guess for some people it's a bonus. But I quite like this like hyper over-engineered approach to insignificant problems. I quite like that.
I was curious by the power supply, actually, when I saw the link you shared.
So the power supply is really cool. For starters, it looks pretty nice. It looks like he knows what he's doing. But also it's a, it goes back to the story I was telling earlier with my friend blowing up his Japanese Dreamcast, his Hello Kitty Dreamcast. Oh, fuck. Actually, yeah. So my friend Mikey, another Mikey, He's an
artist.
See
what I mean? Just everywhere.
Yeah. He's called Shirabon. And his, did I send you a picture of it, Lewis?
No, no. But he's actually an artist I listened to when I was in high school. Like, makes like chiptune music, and yeah. Harvey knows him. Yeah.
He lives up the road from me, and we've become quite good mates. He's a really great guy. But what are you asking about the Hello Kitty Dreamcast?
Yeah, he got. Yeah.
Oh man, so he's really into retro games, but he didn't know much about the Dreamcast. So when he met me, he was like, "Oh, I'm interested in buying a Dreamcast," and I was like, just like unloaded on him everything that I'm obsessed with about the Dreamcast. But I told him about the Hello Kitty Dreamcast, or he maybe already knew about it, and he ordered one from Japan. Mint condition, pink one with VMU, not the box, but everything else, keyboard, controller, VMU, all the documents, some discs as well. I didn't know it had discs. And I went to his house and he was like, "Oh, can you help me set it up and get it all kind of, do you want to come around and see it?" And I was really excited because I wanted to see this Hello Kitty Dreamcast. And we plugged it in and we turned it on and it just went because of course it's a Japanese dream. Yeah. And I just completely...
Is that why you were on the scrounge for a power supply?
That probably was, yeah. Oh. I was, yeah. I was just like...
I've still got that one I offered you, by the way.
Oh, that's nice of you. But do you know what? What happened is he bought a whole new modded console and swapped all the gubbins, the whole internals of the modded console, because he doesn't like tinkering, and I do, into the new Dreamcast. But the funny thing is when we turned it on, it went... And then we looked down and it was like a mini disco with orange light and like 1970s like dance floor smoke coming out of the side of it. There was so much capacitor smoke coming out of it. Because this works in any region. Apparently you just plug it in and it just works it out and it knows and no problem. And it just kind of, it works. So, and he claims that, I mean, there's a load of stuff here. It's got universal input. It's professionally designed, apparently. Very low noise. This is stuff I have no idea about. Very low noise, apparently. Less than 30 millivolts PP. There you go for the stat nerds. Low heat generation. Plug and play, as I said earlier. Medically rated.
Cool.
And high power. All sounds exciting, looks exciting.
I'm glad it's medically rated. That's
yeah, yeah. I think this is like this person's like an electrical engineer. Mm-hmm. They clearly know what they're talking about. For $85, you can grab one of those. I would be less keen on that personally because I don't know, the stock power supply seems to work great for me. And also, you know, in 10 years, we might have an epidemic of everyone's PSUs just kind of dying because the caps on them, you know, that's when they've given up the ghost. So you never know. In 10 years, we might all be crying out for one of these bad boys.
Yeah. I would like to know what people who have one think of it, because at the moment, you pointed this out to me earlier, Harvey, it's all sold out and we're trying to figure out if that's because it's genuinely sold out or if the person like has kind of just put that sign on it just for now while they're working some stuff out. I'm not sure.
I think it's the latter because I have checked it every couple of weeks and I haven't seen them in stock. And in the beginning, I didn't see them in stock. So I think it's been put on ice. Mm-hmm. I'll probably pull the trigger on this advanced controller board just because it's just quite fun. And yeah, I like the idea of having this battery that lasts. Apparently, it will last for years. It will, on one charge, it will hold the time and date on your Dreamcast for years.
That is pretty impressive.
You could just replace your battery for that, though, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. So anyone who's interested, it's thundertronics.net.
Derek, did you have anything you wanted to say about this? I saw you turn your mic on at one point.
Oh, the watcher, Lewis Cox.
That's not all he sees. He sees more.
Oh, my gosh. I knew it. you always have that looming sense. Like, you know, you just, is Lewis watching me right now? It's horrifying to learn that it's true. Anyway, I agree with... Harvey, the controller board mod, which you do have to solder onto the original PCB, it's really, so all my Dreamcasts, I have the controller board, and when I say controller board for those listening at home, we're talking about the PCB on the inside of the console to which all of your controllers connect, all four, right? And the original one has a soldered in battery and some other problems. like a fuse that blows if you get unlucky and plug a controller in while the console is powered on. It could potentially blow that fuse. It's happened to some people, and you need to either replace it or, you know, get a new controller PCB. So all of my Dreamcasts, I have them modified with the resettable fuse and also the rechargeable battery socket mod. So if one of them does die and it's not charging, like, yeah, I can open the console, rip out the coin battery, put a new one in. But like the prospect of never, ever having to do that ever again, it's just a convenience thing where if you're a psychopath like those of us here talking about the Dreamcast on a podcast in 2024, you're like, yeah, I'll spend $35 on that. Why not?
Guilty. So, yeah, I'm guilty of that.
I think it's great. I think it's great. The PSU, the power supply, you know, I will say that I am by default just very, I don't want to say skeptical because it's not, I don't want to carry like a negative connotation, but you know, anyone producing aftermarket power supplies, there's a tremendous burden of proof on them to show why it is a safe replacement. It is the number one most dangerous thing to go wrong in home electronics in general.
Isn't it the biggest killer of retro game fans?
You mean fans as in people? For a second, I thought you were talking about like, ooh, a fan, it spins around.
Don't plug your Japanese fan into a US outlet, basically.
The guy who makes these, he's been in a few other discords that I'm in, and I've always been encouraging of him, but I told him, I said, listen, if you want to, you know, really get widespread community acceptance for an aftermarket PSU, there are a few people out there to whom you should send this. There are people on Twitter, people with electrical engineering backgrounds who can really test this stuff thoroughly and have been, you know, kind of good stewards for the community to show people, hey, do not buy this, or hey, you should buy that. But I do think it's funny he mentioned medically rated. It does tell me he might be an electrical engineer or an embedded designer in the medical industry, because it's such a specific call out, you know.
That's good, though. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. I'm probably going to grab the controller board at some point because it's low risk, both financially and in terms of hazards. but yeah, good stuff. And it's always nice to see more things. There's just so much coming out of the, you know, people building things and writing code and software for this console. It's just so cool.
It never dies.
It's too much. Yeah. I can't take it anymore.
We keep trying to kill it and it just won't die.
That's right.
So I think on that note, it's time to wrap up DreamPod 130. Guys, thanks for joining me on here today. And obviously, thanks to the listeners out there for listening to our rambles. Guys, we'll start with you, Derek. Where can we find you on the net? And what can people be looking for from yourself?
Sure. You can find me, probably the easiest place, so you don't have to spell my last name, is my website, dreamcastforever.com. I can't believe I actually was able to get that domain a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's a good one, man.
I know. And then on the contact page, there's like over a dozen ways to get in touch with me there. And I'm on the artist formerly known as Twitter under the username Derek Pascarella. And in terms of, you know, what's in the pipeline, the first of the two Love Hina games on the Dreamcast is translation is ongoing. It's going to be a bit of a long haul, and Mr. Lewis here is working in an editing capacity with me once again, which I'm very grateful for, because I couldn't do any of these projects at all if I did not have collaboration from, you know, friends and just the wonderful people in the community. But other than that, I might dive into another Saturn game or two. I'm actually going to be helping with writing some tools for one Saturn translation that's already underway. But other than that, yeah, I actually just got a CRT, and now this thing is sucking all my attention and time and energy. It's a Sony BVM, and it's like I cannot believe the number of hours I've sunk into this thing in the last 4 days. Nice. So might just disappear. You might just never see me again.
is that because your electricity bill is going to be so high? Or?
Oh man, now my wife's going to listen to this, Mike, and it's all ruined. She already thinks I'm ridiculous. She says this thing is too big; it doesn't even fit. I don't care.
It's all about joke. Image quality.
Yeah, the joke there, though, Mike, is with these BVMs and these PVMs, you just go down this rabbit hole of like tweaking the picture, and then also like trying to get every single game console in your house to like look as good as it can on the CRT. And it's insane. It's insane. Anyway.
Nice one. Thanks, Derek. Mike, I believe that people can't really find you on the internet. You're sort of somewhat elusive, other than in the Discord, of course.
I'll say I'm very available in the Discord. Dreamcast Librarian on YouTube is a very long-running work in progress, but I think I'm finally at a point where I can start making some proper content for it again.
Fantastic.
But on a much more important note, Remnant 2 is the game I've recently been playing.
Finally. We wrapped it all up at the end. We tied up those loose ends.
Mystery solved.
But even though you've gone to all that trouble of trying to remember the game, you also sound like you don't really recommend it. It's a bit kind of, I think you're saying it's a bit middle of the road.
I think middle of the road's the perfect description for it. It's going through the motions, play. It's good. It's well made. Yeah, it's a game.
It's a game.
I think it's probably the worst thing to be for a game, isn't it? It's really competent. There's nothing wrong with it, but there's nothing for me that's really stood out as like, oh, this is an amazing experience.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you get a truly bad game, it still stands out for that.
Indeed, yeah. What's a random Dreamcast game that you suggest the listeners play over Remnant 2?
Vanishing Point.
Vanishing Point. Don't correct the oversteer.
It's basically Ridge Racer for the Dreamcast. What more could you want?
Yeah, exactly.
Ridge Racer.
Thank you, Mike, for coming on. And next, Harvey, where can we find you? I believe you have some cassettes that are coming out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would plug those, but they've actually sold out, which I'm very thankful for.
Of course.
But yeah, you could make music under the name Pizza Hotline. So jump onto Spotify, stamp that in, you'll find me. Mm-hmm. I've got a YouTube channel. Just go on YouTube, type in Pizza Hotline. And if you're interested in any tapes or CDs or anything like that, or T-shirts, my Bandcamp page. Got a nice merch shop there if you fancy supporting me. But yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I was hoping you would say that you were selling them out the back of your car, just like, you know, box of tapes in there.
I have done once. Didn't go down so well. Bandcamp works better, it turns out, although it's less exciting.
Yeah. Right, so as for the Dreamcast Junkyard, you can find us at www.thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk, and you can also read the website now on a Dreamcast or a Saturn if you go to dcjy.ray.me, and that's spelled R-E-Y-E. And yeah, thanks to Ray, who is the person who put that together. As for more modern ways to reach us, you can get us on Twitter at the DC Junkyard. You can also find us on Facebook. There's a Facebook group. Just type in the Dreamcast Junkyard. We're on YouTube as well. Just type the same in there. And you can also donate to us to help with the running of the website and the podcast. And that is buymeacoffee.com/DC Junkyard. Until next time, guys, thank you for listening and keep dreaming.
on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers. Please stop this disc now.